Picture this, right? It's a brisk Saturday in October.
Oh, the best kind of weather.
Yeah, exactly. The leaves in upstate New York are turning that brilliant fiery orange and red. It looks like just a perfectly quiet, peaceful autumn day.
Right?
But if you could put on a special pair of glasses, glasses that let you actually see radio
It'd
waves,
be blinded, probably.
you really would. You'd see that the sky is absolutely exploding with energy. Like invisible waves are frantically crisscrossing the globe, bouncing off the
Just
atmosphere.
constantly.
Yeah, and turning the entire state of New York into this giant high-speed scavenger hunt. Welcome to the deep dive.
Glad to be here.
Today, we're taking you right into the epicenter of the official results for the 2025 New York QSO Party, or as they call it, the NYQP.
Right, the big event.
Our mission today, we want to explore the sheer explosive energy of this amateur radio competition. We're going to uncover exactly how just a few dedicated, like, road warriors are driving massive global engagement.
It really is this hidden world playing out right under our noses. I mean, for anyone who thinks amateur radio is just, I don't know, people quietly chatting in a basement about the weather.
Right, the stereotype.
Exactly. These official 2025 results tell a completely different story. It's highly competitive, it's deeply strategic, and surprisingly physical.
Radically different. I'm going to throw some of these numbers at you to set the stage here.
Go for it.
The 2025 NYQP shattered the 500 log barrier for the second year in a row. They pulled in 513 submitted logs. We are talking about a massive 78,573 total contacts.
Which is huge.
Yeah. And in the radio world, they call a contact a QSO, just for context. And that's an 11.7% increase from last year.
It's growing so
It
fast.
really is. And it's not just a local New York thing either. Operators sitting in New York made contact with 75 different countries in a single weekend.
Wow. And you know what's fascinating here is the sheer geographical completeness of this event.
Yeah, tell them about the Holy Grail.
Right, so the ultimate goal of the NYQP is to activate, which means to broadcast from and successfully make contacts from all 62 counties in the state of New York.
Every single one.
And this year, they actually pulled it off. Every single county was activated.
Okay, let's unpack this for a second because that is wild when you actually think about the logistics. I mean, New York isn't just Manhattan and the
Not at
suburbs.
all.
You have massive remote stretches of wilderness upstate. It's not like you can just flip a switch and instantly have a station broadcasting from everywhere.
Exactly. I
You
mean, you've
can't.
got highly populated urban areas like the Bronx, right?
Yeah.
And those are incredibly difficult to operate from because the sheer volume of electrical interference from power lines, buildings, it just drowns out the radio
It's
signals.
what they call a high noise floor,
Yeah,
right?
high noise floor. And then on the flip side, you have places on the most wanted list this year, like Hamilton and Lewis counties.
Oh, man.
These are incredibly remote, really sparsely populated areas up in the Adirondacks. There are hardly any local operators actually living there.
Right. So activating all 62 counties doesn't just happen by accident. It requires this dynamic, moving ecosystem of operators who actually physically travel to these locations.
Right, and to understand how they pulled off all 62, we really have to look at the rovers.
The road warriors.
Exactly. These are the mobile and portable operators. For you listening, imagine it's kind of like a high-speed game of Pokemon Go.
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah, but instead of catching digital monsters on your phone while, like, walking around a park, you're driving hundreds of miles in a car with a massive antenna bolted to your trunk.
Just trying to catch invisible radio contacts.
Right, but here's what I don't get. Why is this in-state movement so absolutely critical to the people participating outside of New York? Like, if I'm an operator sitting in Minnesota, why do I care if a guy in a car drives from Albany to Syracuse?
Well, it comes down to the underlying math and really the psychology of the competition.
In these contests, your final score isn't just the raw number of people you talk to, it's the number of contacts multiplied by the number of unique New York counties you connect with.
Multipliers.
Yes, those counties are your multipliers. So let's say you're sitting at a massive, incredibly powerful radio station in Minnesota.
Right, with a huge tower.
Exactly. You can easily connect with all the fixed, permanent stations in New York within the first few hours. You get your base points.
But they hit a wall.
You hit a wall.
Yeah.
To mathematically get a higher score, you desperately need new counties.
Ah, I see. So if you're out of state, you need the targets to literally drive into new territory so you can count them again as a fresh multiplier.
Precisely. It's this brilliant symbiotic relationship. The out-of-state operators need these mobile rovers to cross county lines to log a new multiplier.
Right.
And the mobile operators driving around New York, they need those massive out-of-state stations constantly listening for them so they can rack up their raw contact numbers.
That makes so much sense.
Yet the health, the excitement, the sheer adrenaline of the entire competition depend entirely on this continuous coordinated movement.
Okay, but let me push back here for a second.
Sure.
If I'm that guy in Minnesota, how do I possibly know where these moving cars are?
Right.
Am I just sitting there for 12 hours, slowly spinning the radio dial, just blindly hoping I stumble across a mobile operator the exact second they cross into a rare county?
Yeah.
Because that sounds less like a fun competition and more like finding a needle in a haystack.
That is exactly what it used to be. You just had to spin the dial and hope.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But this year, that movement got a massive technological upgrade. The NYQP team set up a custom tracker online. I think it was mobiletracker.stateqso.com.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they utilized a system called APRS, which is the Automatic Packet Reporting System. This allowed operators all over the world to log onto this custom website and watch these mobile stations move across a digital map in real time.
Oh, that completely changes the dynamic. You're turning an auditory hobby into like a live spectator sport.
It really does. Now, instead of guessing, you can watch their little car icon driving down a highway on your computer screen.
Like cracking an Uber.
Exactly like that. You see them approaching the border of Hamilton County. You know exactly what frequency they're broadcasting on.
Okay.
So you tune your radio to that exact spot and you wait. The second that car crosses the county line, a massive pileup ensues.
And a pileup is exactly what it sounds like, right?
Yes. Suddenly, dozens or even hundreds of stations from around the world are trying to talk to that one car at the exact same time.
It's like trying to order a drink at an incredibly crowded bar
Yes.
where 100 people are shouting their drink orders at the bartender at the exact same millisecond, and the bartender has to pick out just one voice.
It's pure chaos.
That live tracking must have dramatically boosted out-of-state engagement because it builds so much anticipation.
Absolutely. And armed with this real-time tracking tech, the competition among those mobiles and portables reached an absolute fever pitch.
We really have to talk about what these operators actually endured out in the field. Because looking at our sources, these aren't just quiet weekends.
Not at all.
These are some wild, exhausting tales from the road. Let's start with a two-man portable team, KI2D and NK2Y.
Oh, this story is wild.
They pulled off what I can only describe as a strategic masterpiece. Let's call it the Hudson River Crossing.
It's phenomenal.
Okay.
So KI2D and NK2Y were operating as a portable team. Now, portable is different from mobile.
Okay. Clarify that for us.
Sure. A
Yeah.
mobile station operates while the vehicle is actually moving.
Right.
A portable station drives to a location, stops, sets up temporary antennas in a field or a park, and operates on battery or generator power.
Right. And they didn't just pick a nice sunny spot and sit there all day doing crosswords.
Well.
They started their operation at Bear Mountain State Park. And the genius of this location is that it sits exactly on the border of Orange and Rockland counties.
Which is huge for multipliers.
Yeah. They set up their station, taking advantage of the fact that they could give out two counties at once to anyone who contacted them. But that wasn't enough.
No, it wasn't. Midway through a timed contest, they made the decision to physically tear down their entire station.
Which is insane.
It is. And just to be clear, a portable radio station isn't just like a boombox. We are talking about multiple long wire antennas, collapsible masts, radios, laptops, batteries, all the connecting cable.
Just a mess of gear.
Right. They carefully packed all of this delicate equipment into their vehicles, drove out of the park, navigated New York traffic to actually cross the Hudson River.
Unbelievable.
Then they found a completely new location at a place called Shrub Oak, which sits on the Westchester and Putnam County line,
Yeah.
and set the whole thing up again.
Think about the pure stress of that. Every single minute you are off the air, you're losing points. Your competitors are pulling ahead. You have to dismantle everything, drive across a major river, rebuild your station as fast as humanly possible. Just praying you don't snap a wire or, misconfigure your software in the rush.
It's nerve-wracking.
And doing all of this just to offer up two brand new multipliers to those out-of-state hunters.
And it comes down to a brutal mathematical calculation. Does the time you lose driving across the river cost you more points than the new multipliers will gain you?
Well, the math certainly worked out for them this time. Because the result of this madness, they logged 2,537 contacts.
Unbelievable number.
And scored a staggering 385,035 points. They didn't just beat the previous category record, they more than doubled it.
Doubled it.
And let's put that 2,537 contacts into perspective. To do that in a weekend, you aren't just having casual conversations about the weather.
No.
You are making several rapid-fire contacts every single minute you are on the air. It is nonstop auctioneer-level speed.
It perfectly illustrates how strategy, psychological focus, and sheer physical endurance are just as important as the radio equipment itself.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though.
Oh, yeah.
If you think crossing a river is extreme, wait until you hear about the mobile team run by N2ZN and N5OT. They drove what they call the radio car through 21 different counties.
21 counties in a weekend.
Yeah. They logged nearly 1,500 contacts and won their category with almost 250,000 points.
And keep in mind the environment they're in. Operating mobile means one person is behind the wheel, navigating country roads, trying to stick to a rigid schedule.
Which is hard enough.
Right. And the other person is crammed into the passenger seat, staring at a bouncing laptop screen, operating the radio, and frantically trying to pick weak signals out of the static.
Right. And I have to admit, reading through these sources really shattered my perception of this hobby. I always pictured amateur radio as something very, you know, gentle and relaxing.
Yeah, that's the common thought.
But our source notes a very specific, crazy detail about this N2T mobile team. They were transmitting using Morse code.
Yes, CW.
Right, which is often called CW or continuous wave. And they were running 500 watts of power. They ran it so hard and so continuously that they literally melted and deformed the metal antenna bolted to their car. Like, how does that even happen?
It's an incredible detail. It really highlights the physics of radio transmission. When you transmit at 500 watts, you're pushing a significant amount of electrical current through the antenna.
Okay.
Now, the type of radio wave they were using is called the 40-meter band. A full-sized antenna for that wavelength needs to be over 60 feet long.
Which you obviously cannot bolt to the trunk of a car without taking out power lines.
Exactly. That would be a disaster. So to trick the radio into thinking it has a 60-foot antenna, mobile operators use something called a loading coil.
Okay.
It's essentially this large coil of wire wrapped around a cylinder at the base of the antenna. But here's the catch. When you push 500 watts of electricity through that tight coil, electrical resistance naturally generates heat.
So it's basically the same principle as the glowing red coils inside a toaster.
Essentially, yes.
Yeah.
And because they were using Morse code in a rapid-fire contest, their transmitter was constantly firing.
Just nonstop.
Yeah. It had a very high duty cycle, meaning there was barely any time for the coil to cool down between contacts. They pushed the physical hardware completely beyond its thermal limits.
That's wild.
The vinyl wrapping on the antenna coil blistered, and the internal components literally warped and deformed from the sheer heat of their transmission rate.
That is hardcore. I mean, melting metal with invisible radio waves while doing 60 miles an hour down the interstate just to give some guy in Illinois a multiplier point.
Right. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, this level of extreme hardware pushing is exactly what drives the legendary status of the NYQP.
For sure.
It's why those out-of-state operators tune in so eagerly. They know the New York operators are out there crossing rivers and melting antennas just to get the job done.
The intensity of these rovers didn't just melt antennas, though. It absolutely melted the previous record books across the board. The numbers we are seeing this year are just mind-blowing.
We saw some of the most explosive growth in the history of the event.
Take Matt, for example, K2EAG. He operated as a solo portable station from Schuyler County. He set up in a field, ran his radio, and scored over 101,000 points.
Massive score.
Yeah, and breaking a record by 5 or 10% is a great day in any sport. Matt increased the previous record by 11,116%.
Wow.
He beat the old record by a factor of 12. How is a jump like that even mathematically possible?
Well, that kind of jump implies a fundamental shift in how portable operations are being approached. It shows that setting up a temporary station isn't just a casual way to participate anymore.
Ah, the tech is getting better.
Way better. With modern, highly efficient portable radios, lightweight lithium batteries, incredibly optimized temporary antennas, a single operator sitting in a folding chair in a field can now generate a massive, world-class signal that rivals permanent stations.
And speaking of world-class, the global reach of this event is just phenomenal. It's not just New York and the Midwest. There's an operator named Lysy, OM2VL, who is located in Slovakia.
Oh, Lysy is a perennial powerhouse in these
Oh,
state QSO parties.
clearly.
And this year, he set a new international DX record with over 40,000 points.
Wait, let me stop you there because my mind is breaking a little bit at the physics of this.
Okay.
He is in Slovakia. He managed to contact 58 out of the 62 New York counties from all the way across the Atlantic Ocean. How does a radio signal from a car driving through a valley in upstate New York reach Eastern Europe? Because radio waves don't travel through the curvature of the Earth, right?
You're right, they don't. This relies on something called ionospheric propagation.
Sounds like sci-fi.
It kind of is. High up in the Earth's atmosphere is a layer called the ionosphere, which gets charged by solar radiation from the sun. Under the right conditions, certain radio frequencies will bounce off this atmospheric layer, hit the ocean, bounce back up to the sky, and literally zigzag their way around the curvature of the planet.
So he is literally banking his signals off the sky.
He is. But the ionosphere is constantly shifting, like an ocean tide. It requires supreme discipline on his end.
I can imagine.
He's watching that live tracking map, he knows the current solar conditions, and he's waiting for exactly the right moment when a New York mobile crests a hill in a rare county. It's a masterclass in understanding atmospheric physics.
So what does this all mean? We have veterans melting their antennas on the highway. We have guys in Slovakia bouncing signals off the sky to catch 58 counties. It's an incredible display of skill.
Truly.
But the true health of any competition or any hobby, really, is measured by its new participants. Who is coming up to replace these legends?
That is a crucial point. The NYQP has specific overlay categories designed to highlight different demographics. And this year, the youth movement made a massive statement.
They really did. We saw fantastic scores from rookie winner Ken, KC2CWJ, and YL, which stands for Young Lady, or the women's category winner Lauren, W4LEW.
Some really solid operating there.
But the youth brackets are where my jaw actually dropped. We saw a teenager named Maria from Canada, VE3OMV, more than double her own previous score to win her bracket.
Which is awesome.
The standout story has to be Maggie, KE2AIZ.
Oh, Maggie is the youth 12 and under winner. She's 10 years old.
A 10-year-old. And she isn't just speaking into a microphone, she is a Morse code aficionada.
Yep, doing CW.
She's competing using a 150-year-old communication code, tapping it out by hand. She spent part of the contest operating at a massive multi-person mega station in New York called W2FU.
A legendary station.
But she made sure to carve out dedicated solo time to compete entirely on her own. She scored over 14,000 points by herself. And to put that in perspective, her score the previous year was 480.
That is exponential growth.
It's incredible. A 10-year-old girl in upstate New York, mastering the physics of radio waves, tapping out Morse code, and completely crushing her personal best by a factor of nearly 30.
It's so impressive.
But this makes me wonder, how does a 10-year-old even enter this world? It's highly technical, the equipment can be expensive, and as we've seen, the competition is fierce.
This raises an important question, right? And it happens because the veteran operators, the exact same people who are out there crossing rivers and melting antennas, are actively mentoring this fierce next generation.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Amateur radio has a very long, very proud tradition of mentorship. They even have a specific term for mentors. They call them Elmers.
Elmers, I love that.
You see these massive mega stations bringing in young operators like Maggie, letting them sit at the helm of world-class equipment and teaching them not just how to turn the radio on, but the highly complex rapid-fire strategies of radio contesting.
They are passing the torch, and the youths are absolutely sprinting with it.
They really are.
Knowing all this just completely changes how you view the whole event. It isn't just some dry spreadsheet of contacts and call signs submitted at the end of a weekend.
No, not at all.
It's a vibrant, physical, and deeply human adventure. From two guys frantically packing a truck to cross the Hudson River before they lose their multipliers, to thousands of operators tracking cars on digital maps like it's the final minutes of the Super Bowl.
It really is. Yeah.
Or a 10-year-old girl mastering a century-old code to talk to the world. It's just an absolute testament to human connection and ingenuity.
And it serves as a wonderful reminder for all of us. Whether you're a seasoned engineer writing custom software to analyze atmospheric data, or just someone who loves the raw thrill of a good competition, there's a profound lesson here.
Definitely.
It's about pushing the limits of your tools, pushing the limits of your own endurance, and finding creative ways to connect with people, whether they're sitting in the next county over or sitting in a radio shack in Slovakia.
Absolutely. So I want to leave you with a final thought to ponder. The next time you are driving down a quiet country road on a crisp autumn weekend, and you see a car pass by with an unusually large, maybe slightly blistered metal antenna bolted to the back,
Right.
ask yourself, are they just listening to the local pop station? Or are they currently in the middle of a high-stakes 600-mile race, desperately trying to connect a 10-year-old in New York to an operator in Eastern Europe before the ionosphere shifts and the signal fades into the static?
Makes you wonder.
The invisible world around you is a lot louder and a lot more exciting than you think.